Hey guys, Squid here. Just before we start, I wanted to let you know there is going to be swearing and spoilers.
From active time battling to zombie slaying, Waffling Tailors covers video games and beyond.
In this episode, we cover the 2008 CG video game movie Resident Evil Degeneration. We chat about all manner of topics, including everything from snooty British accents to the Zombie Wrestling Week. So without further ado, sit back, grab some snacks, and get ready for this episode entitled Resident Evil Degeneration, Death in the Departure Lounge. Take it away, guys.
Hello there. Greetings and hallucinatrons, my name is Squidge, one half of the co-host of the Waffling Tailors. This is an episode of the Waffling Tailors. Before I tell you what this episode's all about, let me introduce my co-host. You know him, you love him, you can't live without him, he's sexy and he knows it. It is Jay. Make some noise, my man.
Insert generic noise here. Brains.
Okay. If you're going to do noises, I will as well. So, greetings. Greetings, my man. How are you? Are you good?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. It's Sunday. It's April. We're chilling. We're talking about a movie. What could be like the sun has come out near where I live. It's amazing.
Not so lucky where I am. I've got grey clouds and spotty rain, but then again, it could be any time of the year for where I am. So it is another Goes to the Movies episode. Now this one's a little bit different because we normally have a video game movie and we compare it to the game. There was a game released of this, but to my knowledge it only came out on Apple phones and I didn't have one, so I didn't have a chance to play it. The movie in question is Resident Evil Degeneration that was released in 2008. Yes, planes, brains, and automobiles all the way this week.
I feel like we need to splice in someone going, Degeneration Z! Like that.
Or I could try and do something like that.
Or whatever. But even so, that's what we're talking about, Degeneration Z. I hope you've got your popcorn ready. And your boarding pass.
So, Resident Evil Degeneration. As far as I know, it had a very, very limited theatrical release. Or theatrical, even, if I can just get my tongue on its roller. I got this on Blu-ray, originally, way back in the day. And I watched it about 7 times in the same day. It was glorious. I loved it.
Do you remember when Blu-rays were like a new thing? And everyone was like, oh my God, you have to watch these movies in incredibly high definition, such high definition that your TV can't really show it. You remember those? You remember having the DVDs DVD the drive thing. For the Xbox?
I've still got one.
For the 360, sorry. Yeah. And all of the 3 films that came out for it?
I think it was like 15, I think. It wasn't that many. I had like 4 of them. But you can use it as an actual DVD drive if you plug it into something. So I used it to plug it into my PC to actually play DVDs, so I don't have an optical drive anymore.
I mean, who needs an optical drive, right? Nobody.
Yeah, well, sometimes you need one. You got to have love for the optical drive, I think. Yeah. Well, someone's got to have love for the optical drive. Yeah, so way back in the day when it was released in October, so just in time for Halloweeny Fest, however you want to call it, however people call it.
Spooptober.
Or Pooptober, yeah, depending on how scary it is for you. Yeah, released just in time. I think it was either the 18th or the 19th. It was midway through the month anyway. Yeah, and it was one of those little stealth releases, if I remember correctly, because it was one of those where I would frequent where my local Blu-rays are being sold, and just the name caught my eye, and I was like, okay, is this a new game? No, it's Blu-ray. What is it? CG movie. So I got it, and like I said, watched it 7 times. Well, not 7 times. More like four. But still, I watched it a lot in the first day. And yeah, it was... Oh, just... you probably figure this out by now, but I'm going to say amazing a lot, because it is. Especially considering the movie came out in 2008. The whole film, CG-wise, is really quite stunning for the time. So yeah, it's a good one. I'll tell you that, it's something.
There you go, you go.
I was just gonna say it's a Resident Evil movie that's based on the actual franchise instead of Alice in Wonderland with zombies, you know?
Yeah. One reviewer that I watched recently after watching the movie had said this was Capcom's attempt to get greater control over the absolute fuck-up that was the Paul W.S. Anderson movies. Because they literally were. They were like... Like, don't get me wrong, right? We've said it in the episode. If you go back and listen to Resident Evil Paper Kimono, that's our episode about the first Resident Evil movie. It's fun if you're able to, like, take all of the ideas of it being a Resident Evil movie out and just enjoy it for a zombie action horror movie. It's actually lots of fun. And you know, the second Resident Evil movie that we did with Andrew Dickinson, which we split into two parts because we talked about it for so long, you know, that was, again, loads of fun if you detract all of the Resident Evil licenses from it. But I feel like that was kind of the way for a long time is when making movies or video games. You had to like, oh, these are the familiar characters, the familiar settings, but it's essentially authorized fan fiction, right?
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like this being produced by some of the people who were involved with the team and involved with the games and actually being produced by Capcom themselves with links to some of the games, which I have a question about later, Squidge, relating to Resident Evil lore timeline and where this game fits, but we'll come back to that later. Like, I feel like this one works way better as an actual Resident Evil movie, and it fits really well, in my opinion, with like where the games were going in that direction. Like, this was released around the Resident Evil 4 or 5 timeline, right, where we swapped from being survival horror to over the shoulder and running around shooting loads of things. So it kind of fits for me with where Resident Evil was going at the time. Because, like, if you can imagine, and I'm sorry I'm jumping all over what you're saying here, Squidge, but like, if you can imagine making an actual movie of the first Resident Evil game where your characters, and I'm not talking about speedrunning, like, imagine the very first time you played it, right? You're slowly making your way around a spooky mansion, collecting keys and solving puzzles, and the zombies are like a background feature, right? It's actually the spooky mansion, which is the main sort of villain in the first half of that game. And so making a movie of that would pretty much be impossible, which is why... And I'm jumping around a lot, but why Welcome to Raccoon City, or whatever they called it, why I really enjoyed that. And a lot of people didn't, because they were like, oh, hashtag not my Resident Evil. And I'm like, just think about it for a second there, dude, right? You're talking about a game that, if you're not speedrunning, takes something in the region of 4 to 6 hours to complete, with around... Yep. You know, 3 hours worth of story where characters are running around collecting keys and solving puzzles. You ain't going to be able to make it a Resident Evil movie, right? But anyway, I'm getting off my soapbox because we're going to have to cover that movie at some point, Squidge, I think. I think we're going to have to cover that movie and, like, the reaction. Because I feel like it's been long enough now that the people who initially reacted when it first came out was like, that's no, Leon's stupid in this movie, and oh, they used the Jill Sandwich line too early and all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about Welcome to Raccoon City, right? The detractors from that movie, I think now that it's been a few years and now that it's no longer cool to shit on that movie, they're all going to be like, no, I loved it when it first came out. And actually, folks, you know, to prove my point, if you go on the website, you can find the article that I wrote the day after that Squidge and I watched the movie, dated on the day that we watched the movie, that tells you our thoughts. And then there's a further blog post about we need to talk about movie adaptations. Anyway, I've gone way off topic there. I'll put those in the show notes for you so you can go and read them. But yeah, my thought with this movie is it is a ton of fun. It was loads of fun. One person that I saw reviewing it referred to it as a popcorn movie, and it absolutely is. It's like fantastic zombie shooty actiony movie with loads of like I said, ties to the games that were around at the time, and like ties to the Resident Evil canon in the direction that it was going. So I'm full on with this. What about you, Squidge?
I think it not 100% walks the tightrope, but it quite nicely walks the tightrope between its own movie and a lot of nods to the fans. It's got a lot of stuff in there. But again, it is its own movie. It's not holy bollocks over the top with the action sets. It's got suspense. It's got a greasy antagonist. You know, there's a British guy in there. It's got all the tropes, right? But it's there's enough in there where the fans will go, "Ah, I saw that." And then people new to it, yeah, okay, so some of the lip syncing's bad at points, but the story itself, the voice cast, the premise, the areas that they're in, the backdrops, it just works, it flows. And I mean, I'll mention this later on, but it could have actually been split up into a couple of episodes. Like three episodes. It could have quite easily been split up into three, I think, if they didn't want to go down the movie route.
Oh, totally, yeah. It could have been like a limited run series. Like, what was it called? The Resident Evil one?
Infinite Darkness.
It came out on Infinite Darkness, that's it. That was
the one set in the White House. Yeah, I still haven't watched that. I should do. Call myself a Resident Evil
Maybe we'll watch it for this.
Yeah.
We could perhaps do an episode-by-episode breakdown.
Possibly. Possibly, if there's enough there, I suppose. Or maybe like a mini-series or something. Write that down.
Yeah.
And scratch it out. Then write it down again, you know.
And then do a little dance. Have a little stretch.
Yeah, something like that. so yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's different because, yeah, you've got, you know, a situation happens, something goes wrong on a flight, you know, it lands in an airport, our titular character Claire's already there, shit start going down, there's a crash, people start running, there's a special response team, they call in a government agent who happens to be Leon S. Kennedy, he comes in and the story goes from there. I will say, and I can't help myself, I will say on this, one of the first things that I noticed when I first watched this is the voice of Claire Redfield is Alison Court. That made me smile from ear to ear. Oh.
Yep.
Oh, Jubilee from Uncanny X-Men. Oh. Love me some original Claire. Nothing wrong with all the people who's voiced Claire over the years, but you can't beat the original, I don't think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that was clearly done very, very intentionally. Like, we're at a point in the video game releases timeline where we are, like, years away from any of the remakes happening, right? I mean, obviously, we've had the original remake happen, you know, the 1996 to 2000. And one, or whatever it was, 2002 remake. Oh. But we're years away from Resident Evil 2 being remade, and we're actually, you know, we've not seen Claire in a mainline Resident Evil game for decades, for years at this point. Not decades, for years at this point. So it made sense to bring out
Since 2000, since Code Veronica. Yeah.
Absolutely, right? So it made sense to bring her back.
Before she had a triumphant return in Revelations 2, which I could talk about all day. I still play it to this day. I love it.
Absolutely. What we need to do is we definitely need to do an episode about the Revelations series and raid mode and how it's blooming fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, it made perfect sense to me to that they brought Alison Court back, because like she's integral to the story. It's a little nod to the fans. She was the last person to voice Claire at that point, and it's fantastic. And I think someone was asking me the other day, so what's this movie like then? And I said, imagine Die Hard. Right. Oh, sorry. Die Hard 2 meets Snakes on a Plane meets Day of the Dead. And you've got it. That's essentially the movie, right?
I'm not sure when it actually came out, but this is sort of like what happens after the plane touches down in Plane of the Dead. You know, this is the aftermath.
Yes. Oh, gosh, I forgot that movie existed. Thanks a lot, Squidge.
Yeah. Plane of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, Dead of the Dead, Deader of
Fold
the Dead.
Of the Dead.
Dead Squad.
Deader of the Deadest.
Dead Squad.
Dead, Deadest of the Dead, Deads. Maths of the Dead.
And the comedy special, Dead on Ice, that had one date. Yeah, and they just fell everywhere and legs were broken and stuff, you know. What do you expect putting zombies in ice skates?
100%. 100%. Before we get on to like the content of the movie and our favorite scenes, I want to run this question past you there, Squidge, right? Because so we see in the intro that it's very shortly, not a great deal of time has passed. We're not talking days, but we're talking in a number of months, a number of weeks, whatever, or maybe a number of years have passed since Resident Evil 2 happens, right? We see a recreation of the bomb going off at the end of Resident Evil 2, destroying the city, and Resident Evil 3 destroying the city, in the form of a newscast that happens at the beginning, just to set the scene, to remind people who are watching the movie what's happening. And then at some point in the movie, when we meet Leon, who's our government specialist who's been brought in, he's gone from rookie cop to, you know, kick-ass action person, right? And he also talks on the phone with, and I'm sure you're going to correct me on this because I can't remember the person's name, the person that he calls in Resident Evil 4. So we're either...
Hunnigan.
So we're either at Resident Evil 4, slightly before Resident Evil 4, or slightly after Resident Evil 4. My guess is before, right? And so my question to you, Squidge, based on the information provided in the movie, where would you place this movie? It's definitely after Resident Evil 2, but is it before Resident Evil 4? After Resident Evil 4? Like, or is it even, like, is it between Code Veronica and 4? Like, where does it sit?
Right, okay, so timeline. As most people know, if you are Resident Evil fans, Resident Evil 2 and 3 took place simultaneously in September/October 1998. Code Veronica took place 2000. That's when it came out on the Dreamcast first, not the PS2. Resident Evil 4 came out in 2004. So for Leon to go from rookie cop to government agent, it took him from 1998 to 2008. That's when this film is set. It's 2008.
Right.
Resident Evil 5 came out a year later. So Will Farmer, TerraSave, not the BSAA, but TerraSave and Will Farmer predate Resident Evil 5.
Because that's the interesting thing, right? Like I said, there's references to all of the stuff that happens in Resident Evil 5 with Will Farmer, TerraSave, and the stuff in Resident Evil Revelations 2, you know, TerraSave, because Terra doesn't have to always end in IST, right? All of that
end
is
with
referenced.
The wrist. Yeah.
That's it, right? That all happens and is referenced in this, well, the kitschy, stupid joke there isn't referenced, but all of it is referenced in this movie or introduced in this movie, ready for folks to actually pick up on in the next game, which I think is really cool. Like they're extending that world building to actually include all of that stuff. I thought it was really, really cool.
The sort of extended universe that we all want is a Resident Evil universe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I was there for it. I really liked it.
Mm.
Okay, cool. So we're saying it's set before Resident Evil 5 then. That makes some sense.
A year
then,
before, yeah.
Like, okay, so my follow-up question to that then is, why is Claire mostly, in your opinion, why is Claire mostly useless throughout this movie up until the point where she gets given a gun by Leon? Now, obviously, there's the filmmaking side of it where it makes sense to have her being useless because then she has this hero moment of that slow motion gun being thrown at her and then she grabs the gun and then kicks ass, right? But also, like, this is someone who escaped the Raccoon City incident and then went to Europe and in search of her brother and did loads of stuff there and survived a whole bunch of, like, so why is she so bleeding useless?
She is fighting to change things behind the scenes. Right. She's fighting to protect and fighting to change things behind the scenes. She is a protector. Leon is a fighter. And that's a line that's referenced in the movie. But she's also, you know, she's also there to drink tea. So...
to drink tea. She's there to drink tea and chew bubble gum, and she's all out of bubble gum.
Drink tea and chew bourbon biscuits. That's what it is. And for people who aren't British, it's a weird chocolate biscuit that you normally have with tea.
Tea? Earl Grey, hot.
Yeah. But yeah, if you think about it, she's done everything at this point. She's survived the Raccoon City incident. She took on Alfred Ashford, which is noteworthy by itself. She survived Steve, rest in peace, and all that. So yeah, she's done it all. Why would she need to pick up a gun? Why would she want to fight if she can do it behind the scenes?
Well, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Okay.
You know, saving lives with a pen instead of a gun.
Yes. Because I think that was the wonderful juxtaposition in this movie of, like, there's the protests. So, like, in this universe of this movie happening, zombies, I'm going to use the bunny quotes there, bioweapons actually exist, right? And infected people actually exist. And so it's cool to see how the general public, albeit badly animated, but the general public are actually reacting to this thing.
Yeah.
It's also kind of, like, really scary to watch how quickly it spreads. Like, within the 2 minutes or so of the first person who is infected on a plane lands and bites someone, you've got chaos and everybody's dead and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of interesting to see how fast that goes. Now, that could just be movie magic and them going, we need to get through these scenes and actually get it started quickly, so let's just get through the scenes and get it started. Or it could, you know, be a case of, no, this is us showing you how fast the T-virus, the G-virus, whichever one it is, spreads really quickly.
There's the bait and switch of the first time you see someone acting up like a zombie. He's trying to stop the Senator Ron Davis, the short little squeaky twat bag, as I call him. You know, out of all the things he could do as a US senator, right, he could have changed his clothes, he could have had his security team following him from a discreet distance. No, how does he try and ninja his way out? Put on a baseball cap. But while he's trying to sneak out, you've got a guy who's wandering towards him with a zombie mask on. Now, Claire picks up on this. Guy gets arrested. She gets asked, are you part of this as well, indirectly? Next thing you see, there's another guy, but he's in a red bomber jacket and you don't see his head. And there's hair on this one. Shockingly, zombies have hairdos, you know? And he bites the security guard. Security guard goes down. He goes to bite... one of the other, why, after he bites the security guard and he's stumbling towards someone else, if you look, you can see three other zombies in the background shambling. So it's like there's multiple already. Within seconds, there's multiple. So it's spreading like wildfire.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean. Right? Just, it spreads so quickly. And that's, I'm there for that. I'm there for that, you know?
Good old Death and the Departure Lounge.
Yeah, yeah.
The bane of any holiday maker ever.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I was absolutely there for that, because it made total sense that it would happen. In, like, if you could imagine a population center where people are moving a lot, it's an airport. It has to be an airport. And I think the inclusion of the baseball cap on the senator's head was to show you just how out of touch he is from real life, just like all politicians, right? I'm trying not to get too political there, but yeah, I liked it. So let's talk about some of our favorite scenes then, right? So, like, we'll leave it to folks who are listening, and if you haven't seen the movie, definitely go watch it. But Squidge is going to drop some of his favorite bits.
At this point, the airport has already been locked down. No one goes in, no one goes out. There's a perimeter. You see people being quarantined. You see people getting checked. You see people going out the backs of the tents in body bags, which is the only time you ever saw that in sort of Resident Evil type, I was going to say literature then, but any sort of Resident Evil type thing is, was Resident Evil Outbreak, actually. The first episode in the first Resident Evil Outbreak game, one of the endings, if you blew up a street, then it was packed with police officers doing their thing, and they were wandering around, checking on people, zipping up body bags, clearing the way. So it's the first time in a big film you saw, like, you know, people getting quarantined, people flatlining while the medical staff are there, and then they're being taken out. So that's all happening in the meantime. But it's all been quarantined. It's all been shut down. You got the SRT people, which revolves around Angela, one of the main characters, and Greg Giga Chad number one. They're there. They're wondering what's going on. Leon turns up. They follow Leon. He's going to take two people in, and that's the lot. The scene that I like is when they helicopter in, and Leon's like, right, we'll take this a little bit at a time. Giga Chad Greg just runs off. He couldn't give a flying fuck, right? He's like, oh, I can do this, right? Angela does the same. So Leon's doing his thing. He's wandering through. He's a veteran at this point. He knows to shoot him in the head. The line hasn't been said to shoot him in the head yet, but the scene that I like is when the actual, bunny quotes, infected zombies actually get introduced. So Angela wanders in. She sees the carnage. She sees people all over the place, but she sees someone who's down. So she tries to pick them up, put them over the shoulders, try and get them out, starts biting at them. Leon shoots them. Next thing you know, they all start standing up. Leon tries to drag Angela back. Giga Chad Greg runs in, starts shooting everyone. Leon makes a point after the obligatory chest beating, where he goes, woo! And then just sort of goes towards him, you know, like a football, American football celebration type thing, but in your face. Next thing you know, he hears a sound. One of them flies through the window. He's trying to bite him. And then you get this really, really cool camera angle of a zombie trying to bite him. And it's from Giga Chad Greg's point of view. And you see the zombie trying to bite at you. It really threw me first time I watched it. I was waiting to see that again because it's a really cool camera angle. And it's just gets shot off, stands up, and Leon's like, shoot him in the head. It's the only way to kill him. And let's get going. I know this is a couple of scenes later, but I've put it all into one thing. After hearing the gunshots in the executive lounge, Claire says, we've got to go out there. Has anyone got a weapon? And next thing you know, the door's being locked, and you turn around and she pulls up the umbrella. It's like, yeah. I can't even remember the line. She says something along the lines of, didn't expect this coming. And I thought, oh, she's amazing. And then when a zombie goes through it, you just hear, get down. She ducks. Leon shoots the zombie. She turns around. It's just a massive, nod to the original game. It's just, it was amazing. Love it.
Yep, recreation of how they met in Resident Evil 2. I was there for that. I loved it.
Yeah, but in an airport instead of a little greasy spoons diner. I can't remember the name of that diner. I think it was just diner. I've read the novels, I should know this. Doesn't matter.
I mean, someone will know, but it doesn't matter, does it?
Just the initial introduction of the zombies and how quickly they can move when they get going and how deadly they are. And how, like, brown trousers time it is, just for how they go at you. I mean, the one that tried to bite, and his name's just Greg, I'm just calling him Giga Chad because the way he acts, but the one that tries to bite Giga Chad Greg, her face has already started sunken in. You see, there's just her teeth, her lips are not there, her eyes are wide and manic, and she's trying to bite. And it really threw me, because the first time I watched this, it was in the middle of the day, but I drew the curtains. I was like, yeah, I'm going to watch this properly. Drew the curtains. Everything was dark. And when that happened, I had to pause it afterwards. I was like, whoa, wasn't expecting that. Ugh. You know? But yeah, it was that was definitely a thumbs up scene from me, because it was... In any sort of zombie movie, there's always that one scene where they all get introduced. And I think you can't get much better than just like an office full of them going for you, and there's only three of you. And it's that realization moment of the only person that's cool, calm and collected is Leon, while the other two are freaking out. And then when he says, shoot him in the head, then it starts to kick in. You know, this is what we have to do. But just, oh, brilliant.
Yeah, totally. And I am not the first person to make this observation or statement, and I won't be the last, and I'm not claiming to be specially clever or anything, but like, when people talk about the umbrella company, right, the reason, right, So there's a lot of lazy story writing that goes into the first Resident Evil game, right? It's called the T-Virus, originally because it created the Tyrant. But then when they had the scenario writer come in and write the scenario for the second game, they were like, well, we can't call it the T-Virus. What's next? Well, how about genetics? Well, T is one of the characters they used to describe genetics. So then why about G, right? T, G, and then A and C, right? Totally makes sense. And they've kept that tradition on. They haven't moved on to the final letter, but they've kept that tradition on. And because of that slightly lazy story writing, the idea of an umbrella company is a company that... That covers a whole bunch of different industries, right? Like an umbrella covers a person. And I'm not going to be the only person to have made this statement. I'm not the first person to make this statement. I am a dumb idiot from over in the UK, right? So I am not the only person who's ever thought, oh, maybe that's what it is, right? But yeah, the umbrella was fantastic. A nice little silly nod, because they don't talk about umbrella so much in this movie. So like reminding the viewer that, hey, there is this thing called umbrella that was related, that was involved in this thing. Also, we're going to make it a bit silly by having Claire hold an umbrella, you know, let's do this, because why not, right? And it was genuinely a nice little comic relief. It was brilliant. So yeah, I'm fully on board for that silly, for that silliness.
For my money, I think she should have kept it all the movie.
Yeah, right. Just run through it.
Just strapped to her back.
People. Like the way that you use the parasol in Dead Rising, right? Just like, open it up and run towards the zombies.
Yep.
No, I think your scenes are pretty cool choice there. There's a lot going on in that whole extended sequence. And I feel like there were... Perhaps I'm overreaching, but I feel like there were references to the first Resident Evil movie as well. You know, like when they go into the labs and it's all flooded, and one of them sort of sneaks up to the window and they're like, "Ooh, it's floaty." With the zombies sort of getting close to the windows through the offices as they walk through, which is how the zombie jumps through to get Greg. You know, I think that's pretty cool. And like I say, I may be overreaching to get that one. I don't know. But that one was a pretty cool scene, I have to say.
I think it's a nod to a lot of Resident Evil games. I can't say every single one of them, but a lot of them have zombies flying through windows, bashing against windows, rubbing the nose against windows, just trying to get in. The nose-rubbing one is Resident Evil Outbreak, but smashing through windows is a definite trope. Dogs jumping through windows, lickers bursting through windows. So the window thing is a definite callback. I don't think it's in every single Resident Evil game, especially the ones that have zombies and not just infected humans. because that's what it turned out to be later on, like from 4/5 onwards. But yeah, with the classic trilogy of games and a few of the offshoots, a lot of the surprise things are jumping through windows. So yeah, it's not that much of a grand leap. You are right. There is a lot of that, and yeah, it's a way to get a jump scare, isn't it? A way to get tension in a movie. Someone being, you know, smash happens, you can't get your gun up quick enough, something flies on you, you gotta try and get it off you. So yeah, makes sense.
Totally. No, I agree. And I think, like, for me, my first scene starts, I think, just slightly after that. It's a little bit further after that, but it's slightly after that. Mm. Like, that whole bit where they have to work their way across the airport after it's
right
all
out in the open.
Gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all gone all wobbly. And they're like, what are we going to do? Just walk across there? And Leon goes, yep. He doesn't say that, but like that's essentially what he says. He's like, yep, we've got a clear line of fire and we're just going to walk through it. It'll be fine. Just keep moving. It's fine. This is what I do. Right. And I liked the difference between Leon Resident Evil 2 and Leon where he is here. Right. Obviously, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. Right. We, like you said, right, we're post Resident Evil 4. So he is like properly trained in what he does, and he knows exactly how to handle himself, which is why he becomes, you know, a sort of action hero, generic action hero number 7 or whatever. What I didn't like about his character throughout the movie was like the kind of the distantness, I don't think that's a word, the distance that he has between everyone, right? And I don't mean physical distance, I mean
just closed
like
off
how he's he's really closed off, and like he's got the beginnings of the Karen haircut, right? Which I'm sorry, but like what I've noticed is like between different cuts, the hair changes ever so slightly, right? So like he's got it slightly longer on the left than it is on the right, and then in different scenes it's slightly longer on the right than it is on the left, right? And I couldn't get on board with that. Like, who's in the middle of like a zombie outbreak or any kind of bioterrorist setup and going, wait, gotta do my hair. Okay, shoot some zombies, act real cool. Wait, gotta do my hair again.
Who's that handsome guy? Hello, 911 emergency. There's a handsome guy in my house. Oh, wait a second, cancel that. It's only me.
Wait, shoot. You know, who's doing that? Obviously he is, but why? Right, who's he trying to impress?
it's not Mission Impossible Henry Cavill fighting in a bathroom where he reloads his arm, spawns facial hair in a pocket square levels of changing. Absolutely. But yeah
yeah, it's not that, but it may as well have been, right? But I also I want to call out the ridiculously, I called it out earlier on, but the ridiculously stupid over the top action movie sequence where I don't even think she gets a name. The little girl, she falls down the side of the... Sorry, yeah, Ronnie, right? She falls down the side of the airplane. Claire jumps down to go get her, and Leon goes, Claire! And throws his pistol at her. And it got, like, the slow motion is something that I can't even come up with a joke for how stupidly over the top the slow motion is, right? It's just like
bullet time.
Slow motion. Yeah, almost that. Yeah, bullet time. But like when you take it to data up to 11, right? Slow motion, spinning through the air. She isn't even looking. She spins and kicks some kind of some infected person, some zombie, and carries on turning without looking. Sticks a hand out. Catches the gun. Like, this is something that John Woo would have been happy with creating, right? She then gets that and then spins and starts going bang, 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 bang. It was ridiculously stupid, and I absolutely flubbing love it.
The thing is, it's however much ridiculously stupid it is, it's not over the top. That's the thing. It's not over the top. You know, if it was over the top and you had like John Wick levels of grabbing, reloading, stylishly reloading, dodging, knifing and what have you, you know, overselling the situation, the ghost of Kurt Enning would tell them to calm down. But, you know, after the senator intentionally knocks down the little girl and Claire instinctively jumps to go protect her with nothing.
Totally.
Again, she should have had the umbrella with her. But after she instinctively jumps down to protect her, back when, you know, Claire could actually talk to kids and sympathize with them instead of, like, Revelations 2, where it's just barking questions at them, you know, when she could still actually speak to kids. But, yeah, I did like that. She instantly jumped down. No thought of, like, how she's going to protect her. You know, weapon-wise, just jump down, I'm going to protect her. Because that's just who Claire is.
No, totally. You know, and I'm not knocking that bit. It was the stupid over-the-top of catching the gun, right? But you know what? It was fun. It was fun. It achieved what it meant to achieve, and that was to make a fun action sequence, right? And I'm happy about that. I'm happy.
You could say she's really skilled. She knows her way around a gun. I mean, her brother's a STARS member, crying out loud. Goes on to be a member of the BSAA.
I mean, and like I said, right, I'm not looking for justifications for it. I'm just saying it is just fun, right? And I think that, you know, I'm not going to call people out by name, but I'm going to call some people out right now when I say that y'all need to remember, movies are meant to be fun. Right?
Yes.
And that was fun. Yep. It was stupid. It was a proper, oh God, what? As if. But then laughing afterwards moment. It was brilliant. I'm 100%. And just genius. Genius.
I tell you what it is. It's Ash levels from Army of Darkness shooting his shotgun over his shoulder to kill a deadite.
100%.
And then afterwards 100%. He goes, whew, as they fall. That's what level it is, and I'm 100% there for it. It's not just Claire. Leon's got moments like that as well.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah. So, what about your next scene then, Squidge? What's your next scene that you really enjoyed?
It depends, because mine's right at the end of the film. Do you want to do your...
Oh, that's fine.
Have you got a second one?
You know what? When we do these, it's okay to jump about in the timeline of the movie. That's not a problem. Yeah.
Okay, right. So this is after Claire and Leon have got out. This is after Leon and Angela go searching for places. Claire's in the Will Farmer headquarters. This is after they've locked down the terminal lounge, the airport lounge, with two guys, the tag team. You know, of Hank, a short war veteran with a fucking massive lock. He just locked the door. And they're not going to let Joey in to clear out the terminal because they still don't know if there's any survivors. He's just got a massive fucking flamethrower. He just wants to incinerate the lot. Something about, you know, stock prices and, you know, too much damage and they can't set an airport on fire, whatever, politics and what have you. So after all that happened and they've gone to this massive dome thing, which is set out like an umbrella, you know, the symbolism's there. The bit I've got is right at the end. And I'm talking like the last 10 minutes. Where you get to see Curtis after he's already injected himself with the G-virus. He has a conversation, a dialogue with Angela, his sister, saying that the world's got to know. This is the only way they're going to notice. There needs to be villain dialogue. He's not a villain, but he is type dialogue, right? It's essentially the whole ending bit. So you've got Angelo who gets dragged back. You've got the soldiers who try and take him down but fail miserably. But then both parts of the ending fight, it's not what you'd expect from, like, the Paul W.S. Anderson verse of Resident Evil. There's no massive, like, fist fight, or there's guns going, or someone picks up a real gun at the end bit, or, you know, a thing falls on them, or, you know, there's bits and bobs. No, it's just Leon and Angela trying to escape, knowing that they can't fight back. They literally, I think, like, two grenade rounds and four bullets from Leon are shot. That's it.
Yeah.
They're just running. They're just avoiding. And to me, I think if there would have been a massive climactic ending where Leon gets a ton of one-liners and there's bullets being shot and he's doing this, that and the other, it would have gone too ham, too cheesy. It would have gone full on then. It would have lost me. But the fact that they know they can't do anything and they're just trying to... The building is fighting Curtis for them. Dropping things, incinerating things, you know, that's happening. That's all happening. But one thing I really did like, was the fact that I think Angela's just about to get slashed by him, and Leon throws his knife to the massive eye on the shoulder. Yeah. And it's like, that's the weak spot, and it's actually the weak spot, and he reels backwards. I definitely popped for that. I was like, it does work. That is a weak spot. I knew it. You know? But, you know, it's... That last part, it had all the tropes, it had the Resident Evil bingo card, it had all of it. So you had 5-minute countdown, tick. You had two-phase boss battle, tick. The ending boss, the BOW, had a massive shoulder in its eye, tick. And where does it take place? In a biochem lab, tick. Bingo. It's all there.
With a self-destruct sequence going.
Yeah,
tick.
Yeah, with 5 minutes to go, yeah. There's ethanol, there's flames, there's ethanol that gets rained down, there's a spark which is going to set it off, there's idiotic soldiers who can't shoot the bullet with the side of a barn, you know, or seemingly.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just survival instinct that wins the day. It's not badass trickery. I mean, yeah, Leon does end up dangling upside down, hanging onto Angela, and the BOW is hanging onto her leg, which means his legs are stronger than Chris Redfield's arms in Resident Evil 5 because he's dangling on one leg. You know, but shaky fist logic.
Absolutely. That was stupid, over the top nonsense. That was shaky fist logic. Absolutely.
And then you had the slow-mo bullet of shooting him in the smaller of the eye sockets where he went down, you know. And the fact that they both went diving together. That was in the end of the film. But yeah, it's that was definitely... I definitely enjoyed the end of the film because it wasn't... It's more understandable, more realistic in my made-up zombie film. And yeah. It was just the right amount.
Yeah.
In my head canon, in this made-up zombie film, it was the right level of realism, I think.
Oh, totally.
Just about. There was still ridiculous parts, like... You know, diving from platform to platform, and you know, and just the fact of a dome that big and what have you. But yeah, it worked.
Yeah, but like, you have to remember that as much as they are making a movie, and yeah, we'll take the part where it's a movie about like a bunch of biotechnology and all that kind of, take that bit to one side, right? They're making a movie that is also tied into video games, right? And in those video games, you're doing impossible things, right? And so they need to extend the impossible to include Leon being able to run and jump and cover great gaps when he does a single jump, or to be able to have the entirety of his body weight and Angela's body weight and a gigantic bioorganic weapon's body weight held up on one knee. Not both of his legs. You got to remember, it's one knee.
Bruh.
That's an ACL.
Yeah, exactly, right? And you want to learn about that, go see Kevin Nash. But like the whole thing with all of that, right? But I'm perfectly loved it. It was just the right amount of kitsch for me. Because it makes it, it's not that it makes it believable, it's believable within the rules of the universe that the game has created, right? You know, you referenced there Chris punching the boulder, right? And yeah, okay, people made fun of that when it came out, and I'm gonna quote G-Man Lives here, and I'm gonna get it completely wrong, but like, the whole point of him punching that boulder is that this, at the end of Resident Evil 5, this boulder is the thing in the way between him and being safe, and he's being chased by Wesker. So out of desperation, he's not punching it because he knows somehow that he'll destroy it. He's punching it because it's a thing that he can do to try and move the boulder, right? Yeah. But obviously, because it's an action game, everyone thought, well, if I hit it enough, it'll break. That wasn't Chris's thought there. He's got the adrenaline flowing, and he's desperate to get out. And, okay, right. So we're saying that one of Leon's legs, he's obviously not skipped leg day, because his knees can handle the body weight of three people.
He's not skipped knee day.
Absolutely. He didn't skip knee day. I like it.
Not once.
Absolutely.
The true Giga Chad. You know,
again, it makes sense for the universe in which the movie exists, which is a video game universe. A universe where things aren't going to be perfectly logical because it has to fit within the confines of a video game. And if I'm completely honest, right, if you took all of the action-y sequences out of Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil 5, I'm going to guess Resident Evil 6, because I've only ever played the first few levels with you, Squidge. If you take all of those out, you could make a movie of Resident Evil Action, the movie, and it would look like this movie, right? And that is how a realistic, for a given value of realism, zombie outbreak movie would work. You have to get from point A to point B, literally running across a building, and you have to defend yourself. That's how it works. Not, we'll walk around slowly in a spooky mansion, picking up keys and solving puzzles. So I am completely with you on this one. That, because like that was going to be one of my favorite scenes. You know, I was going to say like, yeah, it was a bit silly that they're running and avoiding glass shards falling towards them, but again, that's an action movie trope. It makes perfect sense in the area of entertainment they're trying to bridge the gap between a video game and an action movie. And it, you know what, I'm just going to stop agreeing with you, Squidge, because I'm just agreeing with you, and we're not really producing much in the way of compelling content right now.
No, I mean, you know, even before that, when Curtis was going nuts and you had, like, before the team was taken down, what you've got to remember is, so here's one for you. Remember, kids, when breaking out or through a bio weapons lab, if your team member goes down and you have the room for it in your inventory, pick up their weapon. Not only will it give you precious ammunition, but you can sell the spare weapon to the merchant to save those that valuable money up to buy a rocket launcher. That was obviously what Leon was doing, because he turned up with an M16 with a grenade mount on it.
100%. We need the Snyder cut of this movie, which has the merchant just in the background somewhere of every scene, just standing there going.
Well, here's one for you, right? So the voice of Claire Redfield is Alison Court. We know this. The voice of Leon in this movie was Paul Mercer. Now, Paul Mercer he's got a very recognisable voice. He played Leon S. Kennedy in Resident Evil 4, but he also voiced the merchant in Resident Evil 4. I never knew that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he's buying stuff off himself. He's right, a bit of a jip. Yeah. give me all the free.
Insider trading, that's what it is. Amazing. Cool. Okay. So we've talked about some scenes that we liked.
I love the press in this as well. I don't know the tangent, but I love the press in this. And the press, it could have turned from like the Resident Evil being not the press inside the lounge that get munched. We're talking the press outside the lounge, you know, before things start exploding and stuff. I love how that was sort of like background, but really important, you know, for what's going on, break up the scenery and stuff, you know, because, you know, no matter what you do, you can't play a thriller of the PA system. Zombies don't dance. You know, all they're doing is face planting. Props to the zombie who, when the airplane door opened, he face planted. Props to the stunt guy on that. Just that's... couldn't stop laughing. I couldn't stop. It wasn't just the fact it fell; it was the metallic thud. I had to pause it. I was just laughing so much.
Man, I am I love clips like that where someone or something gets bonked by something made of metal that's hollow, and it makes that wonderful clunk noise. It's brilliant.
Yep. So the reporter, right? If it was a Hollywood film, it might sound. The airport is currently under lockdown, and entrance is not permitted. Authorities are waiting for a special task force to arrive to deal with the situation. According to our sources, the task force consists of a talking chicken, three useless army soldiers, a mustachioed ex-firefighter turned wrestler, and an Australian man our contacts have confirmed as Mike Dundee. An expert when it comes to survival in jungle and rural areas, his quick thinking will be needed to solve this crisis, as well as his skills with a boomerang. As we all know, boomerangs are the things, other than rat flails, that can pacify infected and concussed inhabitants that are still inside the airport. Back to you, Tom. Complete immersion breaking. You'd never hear that.
No, I'm there for it. I love that. That's a fantastic report, that is.
Yeah, you won't hear that in the film, but it's completely immersion breaking, you know, in a made-up film, as you do. So,
I like it. I like it.
Also, just another quick thing to mention, a little bit of if you happen to really listen in between like the action scenes, the snooty British guy, as you might imagine, he's a bad guy. He's British in an American film. Of course, he's going to be a bad guy. Turns out he was one of the researchers in Raccoon City who stole a sample of the G-virus and survived. He took it to Will Farmer. Whoa. He could only sell the T-virus and the G-virus if he has the antidote for them. That's why he was working on them. That's why he takes it to General What's-His-Face to start biohazardous incidents all across the globe. And I think that's what starts off Resident Evil 5 storyline of everyone can have BOW stuff. That's why the BSAA are called in to take out BOW attacks across the globe.
Right.
So it's sort of, it's a precursor to that. But yeah, he was a survivor from Resident Evil 2. He must have got out, you know, got a coffee. He walked in one day, everyone starts sneezing and coughing. You know, he grabbed two of the samples and left really quick and then hightailed out of the city before things went wahoony-shaped. But yeah, it's it adds a little bit of lore to the story.
Right.
It's not really hidden. It is there, but it depends if you're going to be listening towards the end. Yeah, as it's wrapping up, because it does get explained.
Oh, I'm trying to think of some good questions to ask about this movie. I guess the best question that we can just jump to is, I guess, what are your ratings for this movie? I know we're cutting it a bit short, but let's talk about it, right? Because I feel like we've gushed about how much we love this movie. So people will be listening in thinking, well, what do they think about it?
It's not a movie without problems. I will say that.
Okay.
CG is a bit dodgy at times, but...
Let's talk about those problems.
Okay. Lip syncing. It's terrible sometimes. I distinctly think that it was... I don't know. I've got the idea that it was lip synced. It was... The CG was made to have Japanese voices in it.
That's 100% it. That is 100% it.
I got a very much old school Chinese kung fu film vibe from it.
Yeah,
I'd have loved absolutely. It if Claire Redfield started busting out some moves, you know, and kicking some fools down, you know, steel chair out of nowhere, put some zombies through tables. Zombie wrestling league, you know, I'd love that. She puts on a luchador mask. You know, breaks out some tables, smacks them over the head with their ken. See, the thing is, what you don't realise is zombies, in a wrestling point of view, kendo sticks won't work on zombies. They just won't. They're immune to them.
Yeah,
they're immune to them. But you can put them through tables, whack them over the head with chairs, throw them off ladders,
absolutely.
Hit them with ladders, just kendo sticks won't work. Yeah.
Yep, that's it. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there immediately when you said that. Yes, one of the things that people complained about with this movie was that the lip syncing was off. And I'm like, yes, because it was made for, you know, Japanese voice actors first, right? That's it's like saying, oh, well, the lip syncing in the anime is off. Well, yeah, because it wasn't made for. Oh.
I think it works, though, because if you think about it, right, when you've got English dubbing, especially the first Resident Evil game, we're talking the original, the no, don't go, and they stood there all being chased by zombies. The voice actors were told, no, speak slower. Make it over the top.
Of course. Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense that that particular trope is continuous. So that's another one for the bingo card. You know, not exactly the voice lines, but the lip syncing. Bad lip syncing. Tick. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was, I feel like it was after this, and we'll come to it another time when we talk about the other CGI movies, I'm sure. But I feel like it was after this CGI movie that they went, wait a minute, maybe we should be targeting American audiences first with, you know, get the American voice actor in first and do that rather than doing it the sort of traditional way of animating it for our Japanese voice actors and then having someone come in and trying to fit their dialogue, their performance around the shots that we've made for the Japanese voice actors.
Yeah. I think after this one, I could be wrong. I know one I haven't seen yet, Dead Island, especially, and like Resident Evil 6 onwards and Dead Island, there's Matt Mercer does the voice of Leon S. Kennedy. I'm pretty sure the second and third CG film, I can't remember the name of the second one, the third one's Vendetta. I'm pretty sure it's Matt Mercer who does the same thing, and the lip syncing's a lot better on that, like the CG wise. So they well, upgraded, as it were.
You know, we'll cover that one very soon for sure. Are there any?
Sounds like a threat.
Oh, you better watch out, Resident Evil CGI movie. I'm going to watch you.
You bet your ass we're covering it, are we? Or else, okay, you all right? Fair enough.
See this rusty spoon? Yeah.
You've been warned. You're on notice.
Absolutely.
Everyone's on notice.
Absolutely. You're on the list. No, so what are some of the other potential problems that this movie has, Squidge? I'm interested to hear your thoughts. I mean, it might just be that one. I don't know. Is it other things?
Like I mentioned at the beginning, it could have been separated into three or four separate episodes. You could have like the start of it and then getting to the first encounter with the zombie, and then you've got like escaping the airport. Then you've got, so that could be the second episode. The third episode could be finding out the what's going on story-wise, where Claire goes to the dome and the good care is his house before it explodes and big law dump. And then the last episode could just be like the BOW attack. So it could be made into a four-part series. Essentially what I'm saying is that there is like two major set pieces, the airport and the labs. But because of that, the pacing's a little off. It's like action, 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 law dump, action, credits. And yeah. It goes hand in hand with pretty much the games, because it's just like action, action, action. When law dump happens, it's usually 10 to 12 minutes. You know, anything over 14 is Metal Gear Solid level. But you know, but then that lore dump is that 12 minutes worth of lore dump is like cut between all the action sections, and it's like 10 seconds here, 20 seconds there. So it's just action, action, action. And then puzzle, action, ow, reload, fade spray, boss, end. You know, that's pretty much the classic Resident Evil games. So the pacing's a little off. The pacing would seem. It would be better if Resident Evil Degeneration was an actual game. As I said, I never played the mobile version of it on Apple, because I think it was just on Apple back in the day. But if that was made into a game, and you had like puzzles, or it was like pure survival, and it was like all balls to the wall action, and you had to survive, and it was proper survival horror. It worked better. The whole movie you could splice up and put it as cutscenes for a game quite easily. At any point in that film, you could fade to black after a scene and then bring up gameplay. It's just got that vibe to it. You know, it's a film, but then it could just be a cutscene in a game, you know?
Yeah, and I think you've hit the nail on the head there, right? It was actually written as an action. Well, let's call it what it is. It's an action movie rather than a horror movie, right? It's written as an action movie, biopunk movie. But it was also written to be like, can we, you know, buy a video game? It wasn't written by a video game writer. It was written by a very prolific anime and manga writer. But in the way that it was like, if this fails for whatever reason, if we don't, like, it was very clear if you watch through it, they were having this idea of, if this project, whilst we are making it, fails, can we reuse the footage that we've made and make a game? And you're right. As soon as like a scene ends, an action scene ends, or any kind of scene ends in the movie, you could easily fade to black and then bring up the player and say, you know, reload, and send them off on their way. Yeah. Right? It totally could work.
Oh, that'd be amazing for like a Time Crisis type game. Sorry,
yeah, right?
Just tangent now.
Yeah, no, 100%.
It'd be amazing. Right?
But you've hit the nail on the head there by saying it could have easily been a video game. And I completely agree with you that it has pacing issues and that it should have been maybe, instead of it being like a 90-minute movie, maybe a 2-hour long movie, or like you said, maybe split up into several parts and made into a TV show or something. But the problem is that, of course, they wouldn't have done that because this was before the major era of streaming, right? The reason why Infinite Darkness happened, Resident Evil Infinite Darkness or whatever it was called, right? The reason why that happened is because we were at a point where streaming has become a thing. Right. Before then, it really kind of wasn't for big technology companies to sort of focus their effort on. And if you think about it really seriously, Capcom, whilst making a big budget video game, don't have a great deal of money to throw out making a 6, 12, 14 part series. So if they want to make some cash and make a movie, they're going to do a 90-minute movie, one and done, out, right? Using plot points that they already have, character direction they already have, ideas that you're going to come to as a fan of the movie, right? This is essentially fan service the movie, and I'm there for it. I'm happy.
It's fan service a movie with an actual plot, which is surprisingly hard to pull off. To throw in a plot as well and not just have fan service and that's it. So to throw in an 100%. Actual plot and story beats, it's really quite difficult. I haven't seen many video game films that actually do that, apart from like the Sonic and Sonic 2, which came out the past 4 or 5 years. That was they've really been done well. I mean, after the original Sonic idea was, you know, rejigged and it wasn't Nightmare Fuel. But again, at this point, I haven't seen the Mario film. I'm going to see that at some point. But, you know, up until like the past couple of years, video game films have been, right, here's a video game IP. Let's take bits from it and create a story of our own. See the original Mario Brothers film. That was a fantastic cyberpunk film that just happened to have two Italian plumbers in it.
Yeah, and that's the conclusion that we came to when we did that movie, is that it, again, with the first Resident Evil movie, like you said, if you take the property out, it's a fun genre movie, but adding the property in makes it difficult for people to come and watch it because it's not actually what you want to see. But then if you wanted to see a Super Mario Brothers movie in 1993, you would watch someone, it would be an animated movie, it would be side on, it would be 2D, and someone would be running left to right and jumping on stuff. That's not an exciting movie. To make it an exciting movie, you have to give it a plot, you have to give it characters, you have to give it development, not just run left to right and jump. You know, anyway, we've gotten off topic here.
just one more thing to add to that. You came up with the idea that it was a cyberpunk film. It wasn't me, it was you. And I agree with it wholeheartedly, because the minute you said that, it was like light bulb moment. It really made sense. You know, the post-apocalyptic Mad Max cyberpunk film. But a lot of the things that a lot of the video game adaptation movies have. We haven't seen all of them. There's still a fair few. There's a few Uwe Boll movies. We will be getting to them. We just got to get hold of them. There's a few of them.
Yeah.
There's a few games that really...
listeners. We're putting you on notice now that there will be a Uwe Boll series this year.
We've got something special planned for that. But to take a game that's got a very flimsy plot and it's got all action, like one that we've covered, House of the Dead, how would you give that a plot and make it into a film? Well, it was done.
100%.
You know, the thing about video game movies, obviously we haven't seen all of them, is, yeah, there's going to be goods and bads, you know, that most of the time, apart from when a lot of time and effort and a shit ton of time and effort's been put into it, like the more recent adaptations, they're all popcorn films. They're just something to watch on a Sunday. Right, there's good and bad. You can have a laugh. You can have friends there, and you can rip it to pieces and take the piss all you want. There's some good in so far. There's always some good in every video game movie that I've seen. There's always something. There's something to redeem it. There's good points. There's pacing. There's a story, but there's also bad, because yin and yang, good and bad, light, dark. You know, coffee and carrots. There's always something. You know, I was going to say turnips then, but coffee and carrots sounds better, you know?
It does. It sounds way better.
Tangent over. I mean,
amazing. So I guess, right, we're getting to that time in the episode, right? Because what we try to do with these is we try to not waffle on too long such that the episode ends up being longer than the movie, right? That's our what do we call it? Our number one sin or whatever, critical sin or something.
Yeah, movie sin. We do it sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes.
When it's required, we go way over. But when we can kind of get away with it, we like to stick to the length of the movie. So with that being said then, Squidge, let's talk about ratings for this movie, right? So what we usually do for the folks who maybe haven't heard one of these or haven't heard one of these in a long time. So we don't usually rate games on movies. In fact, we've never done that. And this was a very important decision that we made really early on in the life of the site and the podcast and the streams and everything. But then we needed a way to figure out a way of telling the listeners whether they should watch the movie or not, right? And the best way that we came up with was not like 5 chainsaws out of 5 or 8 ooks out of 6 bananas or whatever, right? What we came up with was 3 ratings across 3 categories. The ratings are love it, try it, or fling it into a tree. That's best, and worst, right? In that order, yeah? And what we're going to do for this movie is we're going to rate this movie across 3 separate categories. So those 3 ratings across these 3 categories. These 3 categories are as a video game movie. So as someone who has never played video games before and they're really into movies, they want to get into video games by watching this movie. The second one, as a action, zombie, horror, shooty, bang-bang movie. And then the third thing we're going to rate it on is as a Resident Evil movie in the Resident Evil canon. Now, obviously, listeners, we invite you to go back to our Resident Evil Paper Kimono episode and listen to how we rated that as a Resident Evil movie in a Resident Evil canon. And you'll find that you go listen to that. But before you do that, have a listen to these. So, Squidge, right? My question to you. As a video game movie, as a movie in which you can introduce someone who only ever watches movies into video games, right? They want to get into video games, they've never seen a video game movie, they never played a video game. How would you rate this? Love it, try it, fling it into a tree.
Oh, love it. Straight away. It's got all the ticks from the Resident Evil bingo card. It's got the campy villains. It's got the evil corporations. It's got the specialist, the one guy who can do everything. You know, it's got the clueless heroine who then suddenly becomes a badass, who's related to the guy who turns into a bad guy. You've got cameos from previous characters. You've got callbacks to Resident Evil 2. You've got daft humor. Not slapstick, not stupid, just daft humor. By that, I mean, guy puts a hat on, suddenly he's invisible. You know, it's got that just the right level of daft humor. It is a really good introduction to the video game side of Resident Evil, because the live action films are a different universe entirely, which do their own thing. They're good in their own respect, but to tie directly into the video games, especially with this being a movie that sets to a certain degree, it sets up the underlying stories of Resident Evil 5. It is a really good introduction. And apart from the second CG film they did, all the CG films sort of carry on. They've got their own continuity. I think they reference some of the games as well. So it's sort of like it's the extended multiverse of the video games. It's Resident Evil multiverse, and I am here for it. it's fantastic, and you could do a lot worse with watching something that's meant to be a video game movie for a franchise. We haven't covered the worst ones yet, but you could do a lot worse. There aren't many that are as well put together as this. Again, we haven't covered what I think's the best one yet, but yeah, it is a really good introduction to the Resident Evil franchise. It's got a bit of everything, and it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's not like a 3-hour film either, so yeah, it's a really nice popcorn film.
Gets in, shows you what it's going to show you, tells you what it's going to tell you, then leaves, right? A lot of people I saw online were complaining, oh, the story with Angela and her brother wasn't really that well covered. It doesn't need to be. We got told what we needed to be told for the ending to have that emotional punch that it needed for Angela, right? We didn't need to know any more than that, right? Because it's not a story about Angela. It's not a story about her brother. It's a story about Claire and Leon and setting up Resident Evil 5, right?
And another outbreak, yeah.
Yeah, so you know what, Squidge? I completely agree with you. So for me, as a video game movie, love it. It's going to be fantastic. Like, you can actually sit... You could sit with someone, sit them through this movie, and then put them on any kind of, like, generic third-person over-the-shoulder shooty game, and then say, right, remember when we watched the Resident Evil movie? Yeah? When this scene ended, imagine this what you're playing, happened straight after it. It will get them directly into it.
It actually made me wanting to play the campaign in the first Left 4 Dead called Dead and Arrival, which is a zombie outbreak in an airport. It really made me want to play that after seeing that again, because that's a really good level anyway, a really good chapter, and a really good first person shooter game set in a zombie apocalypse. You just don't have the Resident Evil characters unless you mod them in on PC. But yeah, it's a really unique setting for a zombie survival or a zombie holy shit infection going ballistic movie. I don't think there's that many set in airports.
I think you're right. I don't think there are.
Especially not with an airplane crashing all the way through.
Absolutely. That's why I said it was Die Hard 2 meets Day of the Dead, right?
Yeah.
That's Dawn of the Dead, even. Okay. Yeah. So, as a, what did we say, a zombie, shooty, horror, action-y, John Woo style, whatever it was that I said movie, right? As an action movie. Love it. Try it. Fling it into a tree.
In regards to this, I'd say try it, because if it's like a zombie shooty action flick, there's not enough action in it for a zombie film. There's way too much lore dump. If it's like a Hollywood action film, or even like recently with some of the really, really awesome horror films that are coming in out of like Korea and Japan, the zombie flicks, Train to Baizan, I think it is. I can't remember what it is.
Busan.
Train to Busan and what have you. That's got like little bits of story and then a metric fuck ton of horror. And it's a lot of body horror. It's a lot of scare horror. It's a lot of, you know, there's a little bit and then, holy fuck, and then ending, you know. So even for like 2008, even if it's like for then and compared to now, if you're doing it as an action flick, there needs to be a lot more zombie shooting in it, a lot more action, even though there was a lot in there. It needs to be a lot more quick pace. There needs to be the difficulties with pace need to be replaced with a constant sense of tension. like zombies are chasing us. Crap, is this, you know, is this office, can we go from this office to that one? Is there any ammunition? You know, we run out of this, we're gonna have to go hand to hand. Could we run through the running through the terminal lounge would have to be a lot longer because it'd have to be a lot of near misses and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I'd say try it, because from an action film point of view, there needs to be more action and horror in it. The pacing needs to be tweaked, and there needs to be an almost constant sense of tension. And for my money, if that was going to happen, Claire would escape earlier than Leon, and she would be trying to break into the labs, the Will Farmer labs, while Leon's trying to get everyone else out. So it'd be that, you know, sneaking in one side and then shooting everyone the other side. So I'd tweak it ever so slightly. But as an action film, I would say, yeah, try it, because it's a different one. It's a good kind of different.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you in that the folks should try it rather than, yeah. My rating for this would be try it, but for slightly different reasons. I think, yes, the pacing issues are problematic, but I think that can be sort of hand-waved away with, this was Capcom's first attempt at a major, you know, a 90-minute feature. I'm not trying to defend them, not trying to not defend them or anything like that, but that's, I feel like that's how we could kind of hand-wave that bit out. Right? This is their first attempt. And
really good first attempt.
Yeah, and like the only other big CGI video game related movie that came out around this time was, and it was before this, but it was Final Fantasy Spirits Within. So they were kind of trying to go the exact opposite direction, right? With Spirits Within, it's a wonderful, beautiful movie, and yes, we have covered it. But there's a, like, that is pacing issues of the movie, right? There's a lot of walking around and staring off into the distance, and I'm not trying to say it's a bad movie at all, but there is a lot of, like, just, like, pacing issues in that movie. And that, I think, this was a reaction to that without having to try and go over the top. And I think my try it comes from the fact that I feel like a lot of the action sequences are ridiculously over the top, right? And I think that the problem with that is that people are going to come into this movie thinking, well, it's a movie, there are rules for movies, and it has to be vaguely realistic and this, that, and the other, whereas actually this isn't. This is, it's a video game that they turned into a movie, right? If you attack it from the point of view of, this is a bunch of CGI scenes from a video game that they glued together to make a movie, you'll have a much better time. But you need to go into that with it. And with because of that, I would say it's a try it rather than a love it, because of that reason. So then,
well, a really
as
good
our
action film anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. So for our final rating here, Squidge, the final category, it is as a Resident Evil movie within the Resident Evil canon. So as a Resident Evil video game fan, how would you rate this in the canon, the timeline, the story, the overarching story of Resident Evil?
I'm going to say love it, but it's not going to be a top tier love it. It's going to be like mid tier love it, and I'll explain. What I mean is, there's enough peppered in all the way through, not just at certain parts. There's enough peppered in to sort of help set up, like, Will Farmer, and, you know, you got the surprising TerraSave at the end, and, you know, is who Claire works for originally, and you find out they're not, spoilers, but they're not going to be very useful in the end. You know, it's a nice midpoint between games, a nice stopgap. Essentially, it's 90 minutes of filler with a couple of action scenes in. But as, like, if you take, for example, if you get filler episodes for, like, TV shows, long-standing TV shows, right? I'm not going to... TV shows, animes, whatever you want to call it. It is the better type of filler, where you've got the two main characters from one of the main games still doing their thing, but advancing the plot a little bit at a time, in stages.
It's filler,
you know?
It's It's filler, but it's entertaining, right? It's not like,
yeah,
it's not like, oh, we had to kick something out, so let's just create something and hope that people like it. This is like, we need to create something, but we need to make something that's entertaining and engaging, right? I think I said in one of our recent Ghost of the Movies, I can't remember which one it was. Maybe it was, it doesn't matter which one it was. I was like, this has held my attention and kept me entertained, right? Mm. And that's what you want out of a movie. It doesn't have to be intellectually stimulating. It doesn't have to be the greatest movie ever. None of that nonsense. It just needs to hold your attention and keep you entertained. And from my perspective, this movie does that.
Definitely one for the fans. If you're a fan of the games, you'll get more of a kick out of this. If you're not a fan of the games, it will introduce you enough to the Resident Evil universe where you'll probably want, you'll either Google it or you'll wander up someone who's played the Resident Evil games. Like, oh, I saw Degeneration. So what's that all about? And they'll just start rubbing their hands together and they'll stand there with a conspiracy board and they go, right, I don't care if you haven't got 3 hours, you've got 3 hours now. Let me explain, Mac. And it's got all the red lines and stuff. Like, yeah.
Welcome to my TED Talk.
Welcome to your next obsession, whether you want it or not. Here we go. What we're doing is...
Welcome to my Zed Talk.
Yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, it's a love it, but it's a love it with a little bit of a caveat.
Right, okay.
So it's the movie's a filler, you know?
Yeah. I think for me as well, as someone who's played the majority of the mainline actually canon games up to Resident Evil 5, skipped over 6, and then played a little bit of 7, and then just sort of dropped off and played the remix. As a casual fan, I'll put it that way, right? I'm a casual fan, right? I'm not diving deep into the lore or anything. It was good. I enjoyed it. It was fun. And it did actually, like, I was watching, because I had seen it. I'd seen it after I played Resident Evil 5, right? But I had seen it before this, and I remember watching it going, wait, TerraSave, I know that name. Wait, Will Farmer, I know that name. So, like, it was, like you were saying, it's setting up some of the things for Resident Evil 5. It's setting them up. And you know what? It kept me entertained. It is essentially setting up the storyline and kind of acting as a advertisement for Resident Evil 5. And yes, there are a few scenes where the CGI is a bit jank and, you know, that kind of stuff. But you know what? As a resident, but then a lot of early Resident Evil games, which are my favorite ones, a lot of them are jank, right? It's that simple.
Yeah.
But it's lovable jank, right?
It's jank with tank controls. That's what Resident Evil
absolutely
is.
Let's face it. It's tank jank.
We just love it. It's so charming. Yeah, it's tank jank is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so just so charming.
I think mine is a try it / love it for as a Resident Evil game within the canon of the Resident Evil storyline and universe. I think that's how I would rate it. So I think checking my stopwatch here, Squidge, right? Not counting edits. Yeah, not counting edits and stuff like that. I think we're going to be at about time, which means we haven't committed the original sin, which is good. You know, once you've had your... Yeah, once you've had your chance to actually get your wizardry going and edit everything down, I think it's going to be about time. So, yeah, great stuff. I love it. Have you got any parting thoughts on Resident Evil Degeneration Z as we come to the end of this recording, Squidge?
It's a really good introduction to the CG verse of Resident Evil, which is directly tied to video games, using same as best as they can, the same voice acting, the same models. Some of them are a little different depending on the movie you watch. It's Capcom's creative space to dick around with some of the ideas that were put into the main games that are in some of the other titles. We'll leave that for another day, but they're well worth your time. If you can find somewhere that streams them or a friend's got them, give them a watch, because it's not going to be something you'll regret. It'll be something that'll keep your interest, and it ties into the games, and you're like, oh, I know that voice. I know where they're from. You know, if you're a Resident Evil fan, I'm gonna try not to be gatekeeper here, but if you're a Resident Evil fan, I'm not gonna say you owe it to yourself to watch these, but if you ever get a chance to watch them, watch it, because it'll just put a smile on your face. That's probably the best I can say.
Nice. I like it. So yeah,
much like the original games, it's lovable jank.
100%. Yeah, if you like the lovable jank, or like the direction that the games went in as they sort of, I don't want to say improved, but moved through the different technology spheres of making video games, then yeah, you should totally check out this movie. Even if you're like just a casual Resident Evil fan like I am, right? I'm not a deep dive into the canon guy, but I do love me a Resident Evil game. And I do, one of these days I will sit through Resident Evil 6. Maybe I'll do it on stream, because I've never, like I said, right, I've played through the first few levels with Squidge, and then sort of stopped. So maybe that's what I need to do. I know I've got it, so maybe that's it. I'm calling it out now. Maybe over the next couple of weeks, maybe even before you've heard this episode.
At some point. Let's just say at some point. And I'll say this. Because I know you don't run Windows, if we can figure out a way to play it together, I've got a setup where we can both have our cameras on stream and both play side by side.
Let's do this.
So we could both be playing co-op and streaming at the same time. Amazing. It is possible.
Let's do this. That's what we need to do. So there you go. Amazing. So keep an eye on the website for details about that. I have had a wonderful time chatting Resident Evil with you, Squidge, and I feel like we need to do some of the other CGI movies and do some more Resident Evil stuff. Let us know what you thought of Resident Evil Degeneration. Send us a tweet, get on the Discord server. You're about to hear me talk about ways you can do that in a minute, but definitely reach out, because I want to know what you'll think about Resident Evil Degeneration. If you've been sent this episode by a friend, or indeed a mortal enemy, or happened on it accidentally, I'd like to ask you to check out the website for the show at wafflingtailors.rocks. We have another 180 episodes, or 7 years of our podcast, for you to check out, and we have a section called Those Games We Played, which lists every game we've ever mentioned, how many times we've mentioned it, and what we've said about them. We have socials, they'll be in the links too. We've got Twitter, or X, whichever one you want to call it. We've got Discord. You'll also find the details for that in the description. We also stream on Twitch from time to time, and you can find our previous streams and silly videos on our YouTube channel. So do come check us out.
This episode of The Waffling Tailors made use of the following Creative Commons music: Stardust by Jay Someday, Just Smile by Liku BYD, No Love by Music by Aiden, Fiji by Music by Aiden, Hope for Tomorrow by Tokyo Music Walker, In Dreams by Scott Buckley. Check the show notes for the full music credits and links.